Hey everybody, welcome to the Hero Bells podcast. This is episode 30 that you're about to listen to. I did an episode with Jennison Grigsby, who is a yoga instructor from California. She has been a teacher for 8 years, and she has been practicing for 20 years. Her focus is on teaching students how to cope with stress, anxiety, and the daily pressures of life through yoga. She regularly hosts retreats and workshops throughout the Mediterranean region and classes in person at various studios in Valencia and online. And you can find her work on Instagram and Facebook. And she, on Instagram, she goes by Yoga with Jennison. That's J-E-N-N-I-S-O-N. And on Facebook, she goes by Yoga with Jennison in Valencia, Spain. And her website, which is currently bravasinthesun.com, and that is spelled B-R-A-V-A-S, bravas, in the sun, I-N-T-H-E-S-U-N.com, and soon to be yogawithjennison.com. That's coming soon. By the time you hear this, it might even be live. So I hope you go and check her out and enjoy this interview. By the way, I want to apologize for the crappy audio on my part. You'll hear Jennison very clearly, and myself, for whatever reason, sounds absolutely awful. Like, it sounds like I'm underwater, and I have no idea because I was the one recording. It should have been with a good microphone nonetheless. So it didn't make any sense to me. I apologize for that. I hope you enjoy the interview. And and just let me know what you think in any comment section on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and of course on Anchor, wherever you get your podcasts. Let me know what you think. And enjoy.
Anyway, how have you been doing? And because you have one or two children.
One. He's 4 and a half. Yeah.
And is it weird for him with the COVID stuff that's going
on? Yeah. He's, I think, at the perfect age for it, where he can kind of understand what's going on.
And still be blissfully ignorant.
Yeah, exactly. He's, like, just happy to be home with mommy and daddy. You know, for him, this is, like, the best time of his life. So I think it's a nice reminder for us to remember how much he's enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And just kind of remember this isn't all that bad. Of course, it's frustrating not to be able to get to do certain things, but more important to be together, be healthy.
No, exactly. I mean, for me, it's like always trying to mediate between, you know, trying to, because you have some semblance of normalcy, and then mediating between that and spiraling a little bit into, you know, states of paranoia, especially because this is, you know, people will say this is unprecedented, but I mean, it is and it isn't, because there's been plenty of times where there's been we'll just say disasters where, you know, people have been completely immobile or didn't have all their constitutional rights, things like that. Mm-hmm. So those kinds of things tend to come up and play in the back of a lot of people's minds, especially if you have a flavor for history, which I know Spain does.
Yeah. I mean, I do think it's just been a roller coaster. I think in the beginning, everything was so shocking and terrifying, and you kind of wanted to hibernate anyway. And then try to figure out how am I going to navigate life, work, everything from home. And right. Now we've kind of figured it out. And now I'm more anxious for stepping back into kind of the unknown of what's going to be the new normal. You know, expectations just have to be kept aside over and over again.
You definitely have to be comfortable with novelty.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And for me, I mean, that's, and I'm assuming for you as well, having traveled to here, when you first get here, you're in a total state of novelty. Which where exactly, like, tell me your story, tell me about yourself. Where are you from originally, and where did you grow up?
I grew up mainly in California.
Oh, nice.
My family, we did a stint in Hong Kong for a few years, but more or less all over the coast of California.
Cool.
And I spent the majority of my time in San Diego. I went there for university and just kind of never left until I met my husband, who is Spanish. Mm-hmm. So I met him about 7 years ago when I was traveling around Europe on a little sabbatical from life. And then I moved out here 5 years ago. So I don't know. This is home. It's always felt like home. The first time I came here, I was here for 3 months. So even then, I was kind of establishing a home base here.
Right.
And it's strange to see home change so much so quickly.
Absolutely.
But I still love it. I mean, I don't have any of this desire to go back to the States, especially now, not at this time.
No kidding. It seems very much more volatile there, and especially in California.
Yeah.
There seems to be a lot of, aside from differing opinions, it seems to be very hot. And I don't mean temperature-wise, just in terms of opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was talking to my parents about that last night, saying, it feels different here. Of course, there's like political backlash, but the people aren't against each other. It's, mm-hmm. you know, the politicians and the government versus one another and the people versus the government. But it's not, there's not this feeling of one another against each other. Whereas in the States, I see so much more political unrest in the way of different opinions, different ideas of how to manage this. And here I kind of feel like we've been led in a clear direction.
Right.
And we're all kind of following, doing the same thing as one another, which I think makes it quite easier. It makes it more simple, that's for sure.
Well, at least you don't feel alone. You know, that's one of the problems with it being divisive, is that you, unless you're deeply rooted in your group, you know, where your group identity, we'll say, it definitely makes you feel more alone. And then here, I find that they're, like you said, it's more the people, I say, versus the government, but at least they're more, what would you say, they comply more here, quite a bit. And at the same time, and at the same time, you know, you don't feel that your neighbor's against you. And in the States, and Canada, maybe not so much Canada. In the States especially, it seems to be where most of the volatility comes from. Also, to be fair, that's where most of the media is coming from. So you're going to get that. But so tell me, how did you get into yoga? What started it for you? Give me the genesis.
I started practicing about 20 years ago. I was a teenager and I was doing a research project in high school about anxiety and fears and phobias and how to manage them naturally. So I started taking classes a few times a week, and my mom would pick me up from school and drive me to the local gym, and I would practice with the ladies in the community. And it was not something that was very trendy back then,
right,
or even for young people. But I loved it, and I noticed the benefits right away. I think I was always kind of a stressed out kid, so I think that it helped me even at that age. And then maybe 10 years later, I was in a high pressure corporate job and kind of lost my mind and was suffering from a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression, not living life through my own values. And I had always practiced yoga, but I really dove back into it and then took some time off and became a certified teacher.
Wow.
And
you made a clear decision at one point where it was just like, that's enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I swore I will never, ever walk back into an office. I'm never going to work in an office again. Like that was that. And it'll be 10 years this June.
Wow. Well, you know what? It's always a moment you'll remember when it comes to something that's significant, like with your professional life. I mean, I had a similar moment myself, and that's why I'm here. I had a moment where I just realized that I'm like, hey, I'm in my 30s and I'm beating the crap out of my body, and all the things that I do enjoy in my personal life require my body. And so why am I spending it on a company that doesn't care about me at all?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the day, and I remember the last time I took off my work boots. And I was like, yes, this is great.
Yes.
And I promised myself I'm never going to put on a pair of boots like this again, unless it was like, you know, for my own capacity. I was doing yard work or something like that. But
yeah, good for you.
Yeah. So, and then I never looked back, but I tell you, I suffered for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you did too.
Yeah. I mean, it's a process always, I think. And
yeah, but nobody told you that at the time, did they?
You know, my family's always been really supportive. So, I mean, not surprisingly in the way that they weren't supportive, but surprising of how supportive they were of just kind of me finding my path and living my dreams. And I'm always hesitant to kind of share my dreams with others and my ideas. Mm-hmm. But I've been really lucky to have my family always backing me up and supporting me in every which way that they can. And I think that they have, you know, a really clear perspective that my mental health is the most important thing. And yeah. Same with my husband, lucky enough to have a husband who's kind of willing to buckle up onto this roller coaster of entrepreneurship and help me as much as he can as well. He's in technology, so that's been helpful as especially during the past couple months.
Absolutely. Excuse me. So you started off with doing yoga, and you said you had a corporate job and it caused you a lot of anxiety. And you said you kind of started off as a teenager with a lot of anxiety. And this is the reason I bring this up is mostly because that's something that I have too. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I exercise mostly is just so that I can deal with that sort of thing. And then you had an awesome support structure growing up. And everything that you did with your physical life as a teenager, was it all geared towards that same purpose? Did you always know you had anxiety or maybe other health issues? Is that why you were going in that direction?
I don't think that it was talked about that much in our generation of mm-hmm. children, unless you were like seeing a therapist officially, right. You know, like, I don't think it was something that's as well known as open as it is nowadays. Thankfully mm-hmm. it is. So I think if you asked my parents, they would say they always knew that I was a little bit stressed and anxious.
Yeah.
I was very conscientious as a student, always worried about failing and, kind of wanting to be a perfect student. I had like major middle child syndrome. So really wanting to stand out and kind of be perfect in that way. So I wish I knew kind of what inspired me to do that research project about fear and anxiety. My original plan was to go on a hot air balloon ride and kind of write about how you face your fears and phobias, because I have a fear of heights.
Same with me.
So we're very much alike.
Yeah, well, absolutely. We're very much alike. And just recently, I guess it was last summer, technically, I went and did paragliding, which I won't do again. And I went with one of my good buddies and he's an instructor. He took me out and he's like, cause I just wanted to try to find a way to get over it. And I figured, you know, just kind of dive right in, right? Anything short of bungee jumping or jumping out of a plane. And, I won't do it again.
Yeah.
It scared the crap out of me.
Same.
I almost scared us into a cliff.
Oh my gosh. It's terrifying. I went skydiving. I don't know why, years ago in Switzerland, in the most beautiful place in the world.
I can imagine.
And I remember saying, like, it's the coolest thing I've ever done, and I will never do it again. Like, ever. You cannot pay me enough money to do it again. But the scariest part for me was not the jumping. It was the paragliding part. The part where then you're just in the air.
Right.
And really absorbing how high you are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I don't like it. For me, I don't think that type of facing your fear is really effective. But
no, I think it's probably more of a cognitive behavioral therapy sort of way to kind of condition that out of your mind, as opposed to trying to just scare yourself straight.
Mm-hmm. You know? Absolutely.
It didn't work with me at all. I mean, I would do it again, but I think circumstances matter. I think for me, it's like, okay, I'm running from a bear or something like that, then it's going to be okay. I'll just give you the parachute. I'll jump.
True.
But I don't know. So now I wanted to ask you what actually, and especially considering what we just talked about, what motivates you? What is your main, what really just gives you a fire in your belly?
I think that changes a lot, or it has changed a lot over the past 10 years mm-hmm. since sharing yoga. I think now I only ever act or work when I'm inspired. Mm-hmm. And it might not be like the most effective strategy, but I think inspiration motivates me. So if I'm inspired by something, then I want to write and I can work all day long. The same with teaching. I'm always inspired to teach. So I think that that's good for mm-hmm. me. And what kind of keeps me motivated is feedback. I think hearing from the students that they are benefiting from my classes or from my words or from me sharing these experiences with them. And in the moment when we're face to face, kind of that immediate feedback of their energy or their breath or the hug that we can share at the end of class, that motivates me to keep going.
Right.
And then kind of big picture is just that idea of, I never want to go back to an office. I never want to go back to a life that isn't led by only doing what I love and what I feel passionate about ever. So I'm kind of willing to do whatever it takes to maintain motivation and continue to be inspired and creative so that I can be inspired.
That's a really good answer. Has that always been that clear to you? That's what you exactly what you wanted, or had you just kind of come to understand where you are right now and the perspective that you have? And did you always feel that you got motivation from teaching others and you didn't want to go back to the corporate life, or is this something you just came to realize as time went on?
When I first became a credentialed teacher, I used to actually teach children in school, primary school. And loved that. That was the only other job I really, really loved was primary school teaching.
Right.
And teaching yoga, when I first became certified, I said, I want it to be something that I can have for myself and do on the side when I have children. And I never right. imagined like starting my own business and becoming like a full-on entrepreneur right. and teaching and sharing yoga internationally. That was never my intention. But to answer your question more directly, I think I've always been the kind of person who's like, I'm going to do what I want, always. And I think as a child, I was that way. I wasn't very rebellious, but kind of always have only done things that feel good and do good.
Well, so it seems to be that you're always passing it along.
Sorry?
It seems to be that you're always passing it along. From the communities that you and I are in online within Valencia. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think anyone has a bad thing to say about you, and it certainly shows that you motivate and want to inspire. And if you look at the names of your programs and retreats that you do, they very much seem to be geared towards, I don't know about the spiritual part of it, because I haven't taken part in your courses mm-hmm. or anything like that, but I would say more about the aside from the basically what yoga embodies and getting dealing with anxiety and stress and getting that out of the body as much as you can, mm-hmm. it seems to always work that way, and it shows in your work what your motivations are. So I guess that'll dovetail into this question really well. How do you feel that you provide the most value to people? I mean, this isn't a question this isn't coming from doubt, clearly.
Yeah.
So I want to know where do you think the value in what you do comes from?
I mean, my goal here in Valencia is to build community and connections. Kind of always been my underlining value of everything that I do. And anytime I feel that I'm kind of losing traction or losing sight, that's always what I come back to, is how can I connect? How can I reconnect? Mm-hmm. And how can I help people to connect with one another and deeper within themselves? So a lot of us are expats here,
right.
and we're kind of alone. And even if we have a partner or a family, they're different. My husband is different than me. And also, he's a man. So I first started teaching yoga here to make new girlfriends and to have conversations with other women who were similar to me and had big ideas about travel in the world. And I kind of try to continue with that. So my classes, people, they come in, they hug each other, they talk. It's not the type of class where you come in and you sit by yourself on your mat quietly and then you leave. It's more of this community building. So I think that focus on community and connection brings a lot of value to the class itself, but also to people's life. It gives them a place to belong and a feeling that they really do belong in this community.
Especially, like you said, because you feel alone, it matters a lot to have that connection.
Absolutely. I think so.
I think so. And I mean, it's something that's been, I find that more you get into the, I would say, what do you say, physical, not that yoga isn't fitness. I don't know how, obviously they're two very different things from what, you know, you do and what I do. But I would say, we'll just call it fitness for the, because of the, this just is what it is. It's a very nebulous term, but I think you catch my drift.
Absolutely.
It's very hard to find people who do that outside of CrossFit, because I find CrossFit has that same sense of community.
Uh-huh.
You go there and you go and you are trying to build each other up. And that's probably one of the biggest parts of the appeal. Unfortunately for me, I don't speak Spanish very well, so I'm not getting along with anybody very easily.
Yeah.
Well, that was a really good way of putting it. How do you manage with social media? And it seems like there's, when you first get into the social media game, it seems like there's this idea that you have to do the, you really have to sell yourself on social media platforms. And you kind of do, I don't mean you, but the royal you, people, you kind of do. But at the same time, it seems to me that most of your advertising and your following a lot comes from Facebook. Is that true?
Yeah, Facebook and Instagram. Both. Yeah. Less Facebook now. I'm noticing people are on Facebook a lot less. I think in Valencia, expats use Facebook a lot to find events, to connect to one another, to find things that are going on in the city. Right now, none of us are leaving our house. So we're not really using Facebook as a tool as much these months. So now it's kind of getting more into the Instagram. Instagram is also good for these quick reminders. Like, remember, this is happening. It's one of those things that people are just kind of scrolling through and receiving these reminders or tidbits of information throughout their day. So yeah, both, I would say, for me, have been equally important.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, Instagram has been less important and more, it's been more geared towards Facebook, which is something, I mean, when it comes to social media, I find that fitness, and what I do, a lot of people are looking for a lot of flash. Mm-hmm. And on Facebook, oddly enough, I haven't been putting anything out on there, but it's more just been word of mouth through the community.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, last year I went through a whole binge of trying to put out videos that were nice and flashy for everybody, and it came up so short for the amount of effort that I put into it. And then I became to wonder, and I was like, well, which platforms are going to be the best for you, and how much do you actually have to do? Is there a point of diminishing returns when you're trying to just make some money to be able to live? If you're trying to be an Instagram star, obviously, then that's going to be your thing. That's all you're going to do. So I want to know, do you think that the online world, meaning social media, is saturated with what you and I do? And do you find it difficult to compete? Or is it just because it's mostly local? Mm. Actually, I suppose a better question is, are you doing work online? Do you do lots of work online?
As far as social media?
I just more or, like say teaching itself.
Yeah, I mean, I teach online, so I teach about 6 classes a week online, group classes.
Was this pre-COVID?
No. So pre-COVID, I wasn't teaching any live classes online, but I did a few online courses.
Right.
Some more theoretical based on intention setting or manifestation, more like group coaching, I guess you could say, a little bit of guiding and teaching in that way, online courses. But no, I had never taught online. I don't think ever. I don't even think a private class I've ever done online. And now it seems right. Like this is just our new normal.
And how do you find, obviously you're adapting fairly well, because I'm assuming that you're keeping all your clientele that you have locally anyways, right?
Yeah, it's been different. I mean, it's a challenge because I miss a lot of my students. A lot of people in Valencia are out of work, so it's really challenging in that way for somebody to pay for classes. You kind of think, oh, well, we're all at home and not doing anything else, but, you know, they need to be able to afford it. The time needs to work for them, and also they need to feel motivated and inspired to come to class, which everyone is going through a lot of emotional dis-ease at this moment, at this time. So there's a lot of students that I haven't seen face to face, but a lot of them were able to sign up for some programs that I put out that are donation based, and they were recorded videos. So maybe 20 minutes long, 30 minutes long, that then they could do at their own time. So I know that I'm hanging out with them in their living rooms, but I haven't been able to see their faces in mine. Yeah. I do have some consistent clients who come to every class that I have, and then a lot of friends and family in the States, which has been a really big blessing, something I wasn't really expecting. So I've been able to connect with a lot of people in California and beyond through these online classes, and that's been a huge gift to be able to kind of spread this reach a little bit more online.
Myself included. Is that something that you would want to continue to do even if you were able to go and do your physical classes, or would you just say, I'm done with this and just go back to what you were doing?
I anticipate that I would like to continue, even if it was once a week, a time that people could pop on from whatever country they're in. I like it. So I think that if it continued to work for other people based on their changing of their own schedules, that I would enjoy continuing to do that. And even besides people in other countries, I think it's a convenient way for people here locally to attend class. If you don't mm-hmm. have enough time to go to a class, but you can pop online, then hey,
yeah,
why not?
I, you know what? You're totally right. For me, it's there's a convenience always seems to win. But one thing that I do know about doing group classes, because I had been doing group classes, is that when you can set and you talk about intentions, when you set an intention in a room with people, you can really control the energy. You get a lot of control over people's and I don't mean in a bad way or in a manipulative way. But you can control people's emotions and the energy of the room, and really, and I'm speaking mostly for myself. I've never really taught yoga. I do some yoga poses at the end of my classes, as, you know, the stretching part of yoga. But but I really find that you can really create kind of an ambience, is that that's the right word. And I don't think that's I don't know if that's able to be created quite as well with online. And do you feel that way too?
It's definitely different. Yeah. I mean, when you have a room of people or people outside, you are holding space in a different way. And if you can have music that you're sharing together, you hear your neighbor breathing, you're guided by one another's breath and movement. It's definitely different. Or I can sense if somebody's having an emotional response to a certain posture or a certain song even. And I'm able to be there at their side. I don't think it's impossible. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I just wanted to stop you for a second. And you said you had an emotional response to like a position or a movement. Mm-hmm. Can you describe that? Like, what do you mean by that?
So I teach a lot of yin yoga as well, where you hold postures for a few minutes each. And it's related to traditional Chinese medicine. It's very similar to acupuncture, acupressure, similar type right. of therapy. So there's a lot of release. There's a lot of energy in movement, even when you're in stillness. And so there's a lot that can come up, a lot of an emotional response. So I do a lot of emotional support work through yoga to help people kind of move past these blockages and stagnant energy to kind of move through, I would say, right. and come out on the other side.
Wow. And so what kind of emotional responses would you say are typical?
Usually tears.
People cry.
All the time, yeah. I mean, wow. In yoga all the time. I think, and it's not only in yin and vinyasa too, you're moving and you're breathing, very similar to your work. You are exerting yourself in a way that you need to, right? It's a big release of stress, as you said, for yourself.
Yeah.
And then in yoga, as you know, you finish the class in shavasana, in stillness, in resting. And most of us, we don't take the time to rest. And so that's a big release of itself, is to just lay on the floor and to simply be. And right. I do a lot of reading, some poetry or quotes, a lot of breath work. I kind of incorporate a lot of different ways to balance out our emotions or our state, our physical state in the moment. So yoga elicits a lot of tears, I'd say. Sometimes laughter, sometimes our emotions can be released through laughter, similar to kind of like an inappropriate laugh at a funeral, right?
Yeah.
That type of emotional release. It's never inappropriate. And sometimes the effects happen after a class, maybe hours later, the body is finally able to release something.
Yeah, that's amazing. I know that one of the, you know, it's a, I don't know if it's a universal reputation, but if you've probably heard of the reputation in some yoga classes where there seems to be always an overarching sexual energy, and not that I really want to touch on that too much, but is that, do you think that's also possible? Or is this just kind of like one of those myths that you hear about? Because I haven't really done a lot of yoga.
I think it depends on who's leading the class, honestly, and their style. I do think that, well, there are some styles of yoga that are designed to kind of support healthy sexual relationships with yourself and with partners.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother element that I don't know much about.
I meant more as a byproduct.
Then there's also kind of the sexy yoga teacher who sells themselves in that way.
Right.
And that's not me. It used to frustrate me a lot. Like, why? Like, yoga is not about that. It's not about the perfect body. But then I realized, you know what? It is for some people. And it is motivating and inspiring for some people. And to each his own. I mean, there's our field is saturated, as you mentioned, for a reason, is that one teacher is not perfect for everyone. And we do need this diversity and a variety of teachers to elicit different responses in our different students. And some people do need more of a sexual balancing energy in their experience.
Right.
They're not going to get that, I don't think, out of my class. If they do, I'd be very surprised.
maybe well, flattered.
No, it's definitely a thing with yoga, and especially this modern day yoga. I think that there's a lot of supporters of it and a lot of backlash for it, but I don't know. I'm on the other side of it, so I'm not really sure.
Yeah, well, I found myself in a similar position last year. Actually, I've said it a million times to my friends, but I said last year was probably the strangest year because I was in probably the best shape I'd ever been in the way I looked. The way I felt was mostly probably about 90%. I was doing really, really well. And the amount of, I call it negative attention that I got was astronomical, because that was never my intention. That's not what I teach. It's not part of it. And so, not to say that it isn't a possible byproduct. Obviously, people get in shape so that they are more sexually appealing. But it was definitely strange to me, as it would be to you.
Yeah.
To have that kind of energy around you, like, this is not what I signed up for. This isn't what I do. So it was a very strange thing to have. But anyways, switching topics. Do you think that there are enough practical tools in everyone's day-to-day life to get people to move and maybe do what you do, or do even just any type of movement?
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No.
Well, what tools would you give to people? Like, if you were at the end of a class, what do you give for homework?
That's a good question. I think it depends on the class, the group, always, their vibe, their energy, what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
I am like a big proponent of the integration of breath, movement, and stillness, and making room for all of it. And I've seen firsthand how simply breathing has changed and saved my life. I've seen how movement, as we mentioned, can be a huge release for stress. It can also, I mean, it also helps our body to build strength to endure life.
Absolutely.
And stillness, I think, as I mentioned, we are missing. And I'm a big proponent for stillness, whether it's laying on the ground, like we mentioned, or holding a posture in a seated position for a few minutes, but allowing ourselves to be in stillness with our own mind. So I think integrating those three is kind of the magic formula for me. And for my students, of what I'd like to share.
And what do you recommend with those?
Like using them all?
Well, using them, but would you just say, hey, get cut out 5 minutes for yourself where you just lay on the floor today or tomorrow or every day?
Yeah, in each class I try to teach specific things. So I'll teach a specific breathwork strategy. So it might be something like using an extended exhale, which I think is the simplest. For me, the most effective breathing technique. So our inhales turn on our fight or flight, our sympathetic, the sympathetic state of our nervous system. So if you're about to run from a tiger, you take a deep breath and right, like, and you get ready to go. Yeah. And the exhale is kind of forgotten. When you say take a deep breath, you take a deep breath in and you're not paying much attention to what's happening on the exhale. But the exhale is what brings us into the parasympathetic state, into the rest or digest state of our body. So if you can breathe for 3 counts in and 6 counts out and focus on extending the exhale, in just less than a minute, you're sending the message to your body that you're safe. And your brain and your body are connected in that way, knowing I am safe, I am secure. So for me, as an anti-anxiety natural remedy, I think the extended exhale, for example, is something that I think I've taught every single one of my students at some point. Right. So that would kind of be like a takeaway. And then some of these poses, as I mentioned, I'll be very specific, like this pose is to help you to feel grounded when you're feeling a little bit unnerved, or this pose will help to relieve anxiety and encourage them to hold it in stillness. But everybody is going to be served in a different way depending on what they're going through. It's kind of not like one way for everyone, I suppose.
Right. Well, you know, I really like that what you do is you teach people. And I find that that seems to be forgotten a lot when it comes to fitness instructors, that they're there barking orders, as opposed to teaching people how to do things for their life so that they can make their life better. And I think that's something that I've gravitated towards right away, even though at first I had crazy imposter syndrome because I'm like, who the hell am I? You know, and trying to teach people these tools. And it turns out that I find the world is hungry for it.
Yeah, you're the expert. And I think that about imposter syndrome, of course, there's always going to people who... There's always going to be people who know more than us and who are more experienced. And those are the ones that we get to look to learn from. But in the meantime, there are so many people who are hungry and desperate for your knowledge, for our knowledge. And I feel like when you're coming from a place of the heart, that it's our duty to teach and to share. And and I think that that's why you're doing a beautiful thing, is you're not only teaching, you're also motivating people.
Absolutely.
To stay connected to their goals. And I've seen that from you and from your clients, is that you're the reason that they are getting out of bed to do this work. You know, it's powerful. It's powerful work that you're doing, and it's an important role. So I do think that it's our responsibility to take that seriously.
I totally agree. And that's something that, like I said, I think, and I was going to ask you another question about how you differentiate yourself. And that's actually that kind of goes back to the question of how you manage with social media and compete. And I think it's those subtle differences that people are looking for. It's not how flashy you are. It's what you're really providing, is treating people like they're somebody that you believe that they can learn. And I think a lot of people go into these things feeling absolutely stupid. And in fact, they're just uneducated, and that a good teacher is trying to teach and get you to learn. And they, you know, understand, like you're pointing out, that everybody learns differently. So
I think also with the social media, I think, and maybe you experienced it a little bit, is that you need to be yourself and you need to be authentic, or people can see you right through you. And of course, I've also been guilty at times, like, oh, I'm going to try this strategy because this looks like it's working for this person, right? Or I'm going to post flashy videos. And although I liked your videos, just so that you know, I didn't think that it was flashy. I thought that they were motivating and educational from what I saw.
Well,
but I do think...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I do think authenticity is... has been a big lesson that I've learned, and I think it's easier in Spain. I'm not sure, I can't be honest with you, how I would manage if I was a yoga teacher in California. I think I could lose myself a bit, but I think in Europe, it's a bit easier to be yourself and to be authentic, and I don't take myself too seriously. I don't want people to take yoga too seriously. I want everybody to be welcomed, to be challenged in their own way. And I want them to see me. I want them to see me smiling. If I feel like crying, I want them to see me crying. And I think it's important just to share who you are. And then that way your soul clients, your soul students are going to be the ones who find you. Mm-hmm. Not everybody, but the ones that you're meant to be leading.
That's right. Absolutely. Having that real relationship is 10 times more powerful. Even if it's just one person. I mean, you and I have a mutual friend in Mary. Uh-huh. And just, I've developed this relationship with her over a year, and it's just gone from one thing to the next. And that's been way more powerful than when I was doing videos. Like, I was treating myself last year like a walking business card. People would see how I looked, and then they would assume, oh, well, I want to be like that, and I want to look like that, so that's what I'm going to get. And I got that, but I actually got, and I say they weren't attentive students. Uh-huh. You know, they had the magic pill mentality, that if you just go and do this thing, you kind of go through the motions, you're just going to get it, and it doesn't work that way. But yeah, anyway, I could go on to that for forever, but it's important to develop those relationships, especially in when you're out here and you're alone.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we're all seeking. We're seeking connection. And if I'm choosing to spend an hour with you, I want to feel connected to you. You know, I don't want it to be just another thing I'm checking off during the day. I want it to be a meaningful experience and something I'm enjoying and that's bringing us both life. So
yeah,
I think we live in the best place for that.
I think so too. And especially Valencia. Valencia seems to be just this wonderful place where there's just a vibration here. And it's not like people assume that it's, you know, when you talk about, oh, there's a vibe, it's not this hippie dippy sort of vibe in the way that you would imagine where everyone's just stoned on the beach. It just seems like this city is not too big and it's not too small. It's warm. There's a mix of everything here. It's just small enough that it's off of most radars, and enough that it attracts mostly the right people. It's, I mean, what a safe city. I don't have to worry about my wife walking through the city at night ever. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. I have very few bad things to say about this city. But here's another thing about talking about practical tools. What are your, when you're feeling down, well, maybe you've already answered this, but maybe we'll see what you think. What are your go-to tools, like your mental tools that you go to as soon as your chips are down? Like you just feel like garbage. You mentally, you're feeling the anxiety, and not to the point where you're just like, oh, I get this feeling. You've already been down the spiral. You know what I mean? You're at a low. What's the first thing that you do?
Rest. I think it's something that's very underrated. Mm-hmm. And society puts a lot of pressure on us to go and to do, and kind of romanticizes being busy. Right. And I'm a huge fan of resting. I'm a huge fan of taking breaks. For me, that's my trigger. And I would say it always has been, but I don't think I realized it until I became a mother, that if I was tired, I couldn't handle anything. Right. It was impossible to have a conversation even. So I started really prioritizing rest. I'm not very good at it. I mean, I haven't gone to bed before midnight since this lockdown started.
Right.
But I know on the days of when I'm slipping, I just need to give myself a timeout. I'm like a child. I'm like, I need a timeout. My husband will put me down for a nap, you know, and it's just like, turn off. It's the only way for me to kind of regroup and get re-inspired.
And would you say getting off of devices is the most help for that? Or at least a big help?
Absolutely. I mean, I have a major addiction to devices. And I mean, as you know, hold on. If our business is run on and through social media and WhatsApp, for example, and especially now everything is online, that's our livelihood, that's our connection is right there in the palm of our hand. So it's gotten easier for me to put my phone down. When I first started my business, I would go through panic of like, I might miss a message from someone and then they're going to choose somebody else's class, or they're not going to pick up their phone before the class to see the directions to where we're meeting. I would go through this whole anxiety. Now I don't feel that fear anymore of kind of missing out, but I do get addicted to the connection of it, I think, of feeling connected to my people.
And that's really good that you put it that way.
Yeah. So, but it does take practice. So the thing I've finally been good at is after my son is in bed, the phone is away. Nobody needs to hear from me after 9 p.m. You know,
that's right.
And if they do, I'll check my phone right before bed and get back to an emergency. But yeah, that's a challenge for me, definitely.
I think it's a challenge for most people. And that's something that I've tried to cultivate into my life also is at a certain point in time of the day, if it's beyond, like you said, maybe 9 o'clock in the evening, turning the phone off. And if I go on the phone, I know right away that it's on me and I'm addicted to something. There's an endorphin rush that I'm seeking that I'm not getting. And oddly enough, how you said rest was one of those tools that you use when you spiral. That's my go-to. I'm like, actually what I need to do is sleep. My brain's looking for something to comfort it. And I either need sleep or food. And usually by 9 p.m. I've already eaten. And at least if it's a good day. And if I've checked off all the boxes of making sure that all my, you know, my days lined up the way it should be, then if I'm going towards my phone, it's instant feedback that I'm doing things incorrectly. I need something else.
Yeah.
You, like you said, you don't need your phone. No one needs to get a hold of you that bad. You're not posting anything. So what are you there for? And maybe it's for me, you know, I'm trying to get, it could be that sneaking thing in the back of my mind, trying to get validation from some likes or something. I don't know. Just
absolutely.
As a crude example. So I guess what I was going to ask you, but I think is fairly obvious, maybe you can elaborate on it, but do you believe in time off? And that could be in the entrepreneurial sense, a tricky word sometimes. you know, obviously with exercise, you might have a different idea than you would with your business, but what's it like for you in terms of rest?
And yeah, I mean, I think we should be having more time off than time on. Definitely. So I think the hard part is what we're talking about with the social media is that you have to turn it off. You have to, when you are an entrepreneur and you own your own business, you know, we don't have hours of the day where we work and then we can leave our work and go home. It doesn't work like that. So that's been a challenge for me to say, like, these are my work hours and these are not. And sometimes I need to remove myself and go out to dinner with friends, or my husband and I sometimes will just go away for a weekend so I can literally turn off. And I know I'm not even in Valencia. I can't access it. I can't do anything there. So I have permission now to turn off.
Right.
During the day, the same. I don't think that we need to be working 8 hours a day. Can we? Yeah, of course.
Right.
24. It's never ending, but I try to remember to have more time off than time on.
Right. I think being in Valencia, it also fosters that sort of mentality quite well because it's very relaxed here.
Yeah, you know, and there's lots of opportunity to enjoy one another and to enjoy the city here without paying a lot of money or going out of your way.
Well, absolutely. And the thing is, if you're the type of person who is, you know, the white rabbit always out of time, you get noticed. Quite a bit. And that's the first thing I noticed when I got here is how fast I was walking and how much I seemed to be busy for nothing. So what do you do with your time off, your rest and relaxation? Because I mean, you're working and what you do seems to be, even though you're teaching, quite soothing and relieving in a way. And so, mm-hmm. and you obviously enjoy your work. So what does time off look like to you? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, time off, I won't do anything physical. Yeah. So yoga can be relaxing. I also teach vinyasa, which is a bit more energetic. Mm-hmm. I don't teach sexy vinyasa, but I do teach the energizing vinyasa. And that can be energizing and also tiring. So if I take rest, I'm definitely not going for a run or, I mean, I will go for a walk, but I don't really physically exert myself. I rest. I love to Netflix and chill by myself.
Yeah.
We have a little separate guest room, so I'll just go in there and lock myself in and have some quiet time. Read. I love to read. And again, like I said, sometimes I actually need to remove myself. So it'll be meeting up with some friends or going to sit in the river, the beach if I have access, and missing the beach a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so sometimes I need to physically remove myself from my house. But otherwise, I'm fine with just resting, laying on the couch.
Just chilling.
Just chilling, yeah.
That's good. So we can kind of understand from what your lifestyle is like, what a good life balance looks like to you. But when you're mm-hmm. giving advice to other people, is it more based on what you do when you give this advice or what you tell other people as a general rule? If you were to give general advice on how mm-hmm. to balance your life, what would you say?
I think it's hard to give general advice.
It is.
I don't know that I would advise anybody if I didn't know their specific circumstance, because I do know that I'm privileged in a lot of ways. But at the same time, my wish for everybody, my big wish is that people would only do things that they want to do. I think I've gotten to a point in my life where everything I do is by choice, and it's heartfelt and it's inspired. And I know I'm lucky to have arrived here for now. I don't know where this journey will take me in the future, but in this moment, I know that that's a blessing. But I hope that people feel inspired to make space for more of that in their life. And I would encourage them and maybe advise them if I knew what it was that they were using as distractions or using as excuses or hiding behind, or the reasons why they were holding on to something that isn't necessarily serving their growth.
Mm-hmm.
I would advise them to kind of let go of anything that is not serving them. To me, there doesn't seem to be any reason to waste our life on things that aren't making us feel happy and fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And that might sound very like yoga-y and a privileged little white girl, I'm not really sure, but I also know the depths of despair that I've been through in my life and the hardships that I've had to overcome to get to this point. So I know none of this was handed to me on a silver platter. It all came from working through a lot. So I hope that people, I would just encourage people, and I think I do encourage them to live a life that they love and all of the meanings of that.
That's really good. That's beautiful. That's a good way to put it. I think regardless of whatever privilege you might think, I think most of the battles in life are actually inside the head. And that can be, there's always somebody who has it worse in one regard or another. And as soon as you realize that, no matter what your position in life is, you can start to focus on what you have to be grateful for. Like you're pointing out, and that immediately I find makes you at least feel a little bit better. So no, but you know what, you've gone through your hardships and you own those, and I don't think the explanation, you don't have to justify it. I don't think anyone has to justify it to anybody else, you know. You said something and I'm trying to remember what I was going to tag on there, but anyway. So since you said you're a reader, you like to read quite a bit, what books would you recommend to people? In three.
The book that I constantly recommend to people is by Gabrielle Bernstein. It's called The Universe Has Your Back.
Mm.
And it's kind of a spiritual self-help type of book, but it's just about that. It's about understanding and shifting your perspective to realize that you are always being guided, and also really practical ways of knowing how to recognize when you are being guided on a certain path. Mm-hmm. Choosing love over fear in the way of fear can come up as anger or sadness, as judgment, actual fear. So when you're recognizing that you're in a space of fear, how to kind of flip it and turn it into a place of love, of acceptance, right. of understanding, of joy. That book came to me at the perfect time in my life, and I reference it a lot in my classes. And I think, and I know maybe at least 10 of my students who have read it and also love it. The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle also is a really wonderful book, really helped me through anxiety. It's about being present in the moment. And again, right. very practical, it's a very deep dive, but a really useful book. You said yeah, three.
I know Eckhart Tolle. I know that name, and I would know his face if I saw him, and I have yet to read one of his books. And apparently they're very good.
Yeah.
Apparently all of his books are very good in terms of, I think one thing that he does really well, and I've heard him speak a little bit here and there, is that he is just a person who is emotionally just always on an even keel. He doesn't seem to be ever too excited and too low. He's always just even and straight. Excuse me, I have a tickle. So you said The Power of Now is the name of the book?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's about detaching yourself from the emotions, like you said, the things that are happening in your head, and bringing yourself back to your center in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've picked up on his even-keeled emotional states, that's a big part of it. It's a lot of times our emotions are kind of misleading us, right? It's an energy in motion. So it's just about regrouping that emotion and bringing it back to where it's meant to be.
Well, that's a good way of putting it. What about, you have, you said the universe has your back, and then The Power of Now. What else? What else? Give me one more.
Honestly, I'd say something like Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
That helps you to just disconnect. I love those types of books. I recently also read The Red Queen. These kind of like fantasy books. This puts you in right. another world. I think it's so important, like I've been saying, just to disconnect and allow yourself to just kind of be dreamy and and enjoy, right? Enjoy your
Absolutely.
Time.
Well, I mean, it gives you contrast. You need contrast in your life, yeah, right? You know, if you're busy all the time, you're constantly trying to improve yourself. Well, improving yourself can also come from the exact opposite of not trying to improve yourself. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you said you'd have that book come to you at the right time in your life. You can also get bad books that come to you at the right time in the same way, and that you just, and I say bad books are just the wrong book. Mm-hmm. And to know what you don't want. I mean, you're always constantly getting feedback, and you can always be using that, I guess it depends.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then before we go, what do you think is, not to be too negative, but what do you think is the negative aspect of your industry? Would it be what we talked about earlier in terms of just kind of where some people try to cultivate that sort of sexual energy unnecessarily, as opposed to it being a byproduct that just happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so subjective, because sex does sell, and it is working for people to live their dream life, and it is speaking to other people and serving them in ways that they need. So I just hope that it's appropriate, and I don't know. I don't know that there is a possibility for there to be a negative aspect, because I think everything is there for a reason, and it all kind of harmonizes in a way. And like right. I said, everyone speaks to a different audience, and you're going to find your speaker and you're going to find your audience. And I think that that's what's important to maintain this diversity in this type of industry or community.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree with that. One thing that I know, obviously you can tell from the fitness industry or the people who are trying to, you know, where the flash is, where all those flashy things that aren't really serving anybody, but all it takes is just for us a quick flare up of inspiration that got that one person off the couch. And that matters. It's yep. Those are all significant small things that equal big wins. And that's why I wanted to tag on to the negativity part, because it's sort of a trick question, in that I want to see what people think about negative things in the industry. And when I see that, even though they could be negative, and so in some cases maybe they are, but they're necessary to be there, because mm-hmm. you would have yeah. no obstacle, and you would not have contrast, and you wouldn't have context. Mm-hmm. So I think all those things really matter. But anyway, anything that you would want to add to anybody listening to this or watching this, and what you can offer them, that you tell us about your services and exactly what you do. You said yin yoga? What's it called?
Yeah, so in Valencia, I teach classes as well as organize different experiences, all of which are community building, motivated by community and connection. So mm-hmm. I might do like a yoga and brunch where we all get to sit together and have brunch together after, or we go and visit a winery and we do yoga at the winery, yoga and some wine tasting, yoga with live piano. My favorite and probably the most popular class is full moon yoga at the beach. So every month we go out onto the beach and celebrate under the full moon with our breath and our bodies. And then in addition to that, I run international yoga retreats. So started in the Mediterranean, and now we've kind of expanded. I've done a couple in California. We had a few scheduled this year in Morocco and Greece and, wow. and other parts of Italy that were canceled. But a lot of Spain, a lot of Italy, where the heart is. And they're usually either weekend if they're local, or 4 or 5 nights we go away. We practice both vinyasa and yin yoga, meditation. We enjoy nature, eat a lot of good food, drink a lot of good wine, and make new friends. And I think that that's what it's all about, is just being together and kind of that disconnection from the city and our responsibilities, and giving yourself a chance to rest and connect in more beautiful ways.
That's awesome. That sounds like a wonderful experience, being able to go to, I think I was talking to Mary, and I think you went to Tuscany, is that correct?
Yes.
Wow, that'd be magical. Yeah. And I don't use that word very often.
Have you been to Tuscany?
No, I honestly, I came here, I went through Holland, and then came to Valencia, and I have not left Valencia at all.
Oh, man, you need to come with us sometime.
I won't.
Men are invited. Don't worry.
I believe it. I would love to do it. So where do people find you? Tell me your website, Instagram, Facebook.
So Instagram, yoga with Jennison, Jennison.
Okay.
Facebook, you can find the same. The Facebook page is Yoga with Jennison in Valencia, Spain. And I do have a website. It's called Bravas in the Sun. It started off as a little blog as a mom, an American mom in Valencia. And now it's kind of morphed. So that'll actually be updating in the next week or two to my new website, which will be yogawithjennison.com.
Awesome.
So that'll be launching very soon. But for now, everything is Bravas in the Sun, because that's the dream here in Valencia.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time. And maybe we can do this again in the future.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. I hope this podcast was useful to you. I want to let you know that I have more tips and workouts available on YouTube that will also help you along the way of your training. Just search Hero Bells, and please comment. I love comments. Like and subscribe, turn on notifications, and check in often. Thanks so much again. Have a great day.